My name is Dr. Shayna Stephen, and my Black is transnational.
You are listening to Season 5 of My Dad's Podcast, My Black is Transnational, a podcast about Blackness and her reconnecting back to our native homelands. Find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Check us out on YouTube. You can follow us on Instagram or blacktransnational.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of My Black is Transnational. My name is Dr. Kalechi Bain-Lamberts, and coming up on this show, I get to interview a really good friend of mine, Dr. Shayna Stephen, who will be joining us to talk about her perspectives as not just a pediatrician, but as the child of St. Lucian immigrants. And we get into a very interesting conversation about what it is and what it's like growing up in a Caribbean household, but also from a small island. And so that's one I hope you all enjoy. But before we get into that, let's go through our formalities. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, you can find this podcast wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. We're also on YouTube, so please be sure to check us out if you want to watch the video version. Please be warned, though, that the video version is a lot different than the audio version in terms of the formatting. It's the video is tailored for YouTube purposes only. But the audio version, thanks for all those who've been listening throughout. This is the same old, same old. You can also find us on our website at www.blacktransnational.com. That's a one-stop shop for everything you need regarding this show. But please follow us on Instagram at Black Transnational Podcast. You can follow me, the host, at @BlackTransnational_. You can find us at Twitter at MBI Transnational, or I believe it's MB Transnational. I'm sorry. You can find us on Facebook at Black Transnational Podcast as well. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about our guest before we jump into the conversation. So Dr. Shayna Stephen is a really good friend, family friend of ours, my wife and me. And we've, had many interactions over the years, but it just dawned on me as I was doing things. I was like, yo, I have to get Shayna on the show. She represents a small island. And when we talk about things on this podcast, it's always like the big ones, the big countries, the Nigerians and the Jamaicans and the Haitians. And that's cool. It's a beautiful thing. The diaspora is what it is. But I want to also continue to explore the diversity and what's happening as far as what transnationalism looks like all across the board, right? Especially from people from smaller islands and what their perspectives is like and how connected are we truly. And so it was a great opportunity to have a fun conversation with someone I know, but someone who I got to know a little bit better just from hearing her perspectives as far as what fueled her to become who she is now, her passions, and all the things that her cultural upbringing had instilled in her to be an advocate for others and what she aspires to do in the position that she's in. And how transnationalism plays a role with all of that. So I hope that you all enjoy the conversation because I surely did. And if you're getting to watch the conversation as well, you'll see there are lots of laughters, lots of smiles, and lots of jokes. So it was a fun one. And so I'm very grateful to Dr. Stephen for that. And I hope you all enjoy and are able to glean out some very important nuggets that she does drop in the midst of just this informal conversation of sorts. All right. Without any further ado, here's my conversation with Dr. Shayna Stephen. Enjoy. What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of My Black is Transnational. And we have on here good sister of mine who is blessing us with the presence. You know, we had to catch her after work. She out here making moves. I have on here all the way in Miami or Fort Lauderdale?
We're in Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale, y'all on the safe side. Okay. I got my sis over here, Dr. Shayna Stephen, who will be talking to us a little bit about her experience representing the islands of St. Lucia. And so, just pediatrician extraordinaire. Travel blogger, travel shower, traveler extraordinaire, going to Dubai for the low ski, getting stuck, midway somewhere. No, nonetheless, thank you so much, sis, for jumping on the show. And yeah, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad I finally made it. Mama, I made it. I finally made it to the show. Proud of what you're doing here.
I had to make sure I came correct. We had to make sure we had our seasons. You know, load it up so we can be able to say, look, man, this is our proof of concept. Just in case we have to come talk to your peoples, your representatives, and be like, yo, this is our proof of concept. It's a legit podcast. And now we can have you on the show.
Y'all are seasoned. I'm loving it.
All right. Well, so before we get into the conversation, I just want you to take a minute or so to just introduce yourself to the people watching, people listening, who you are, where you represent, and anything interesting that you want to share about yourself.
Sounds good. All right. Hi, everybody. As Kale said, I'm Dr. Shayna Steven. I'm happy to be here with you guys. Born and raised in Fort Lauderdale. Always knew growing up I wanted to help people. So I knew I was either going to go into healthcare or be a teacher. Going into healthcare, my mom always said I shouldn't do it. She said, you're too squeamish. You don't like blood. So I kept going, just kind of panned out. Wanted to be a teacher. That's still a joy of mine, but I really, really enjoy what I'm doing. So I ended up going to University of Florida. I then went to Meharry for medical school, trained in Atlanta at Morehouse, and I moved back down here to South Florida, now working as a pediatrician, seeing people that I love, doing what I love, teaching my patients to advocate for themselves.
Wow. So wait, let's talk about, we're going to talk a little bit about the upbringing real quick, right? Well, you got to let them know where you're representing again, where your people's from.
I represent in St. Lucian. Okay. So I'm definitely St. Lucian. Both of my parents was born and raised in St. Lucia, came to Florida in their 20s. And then myself, my brother, and my sister were both born in South Florida. Okay. So we're technically first generation, but definitely raised in a Caribbean household.
And we're going to unpack that in a little bit of what that was like. But before we get into that, you mentioned that your mom's and said that you are too squeamish to be a teacher. It's so interesting because, you know, Wanda isn't on the show. For those who are listening, Dr. Wanda is my wife. Y'all heard in past seasons. But, she said the same thing about, like, she wanted to be a teacher if she wasn't going to be a doctor. Is he going to be a teacher? And then, of course, you know, she loved doing nails and stuff, but that wasn't going to be initially her drive. That was her hobby. But like teaching. So like what level of teaching were you initially thinking? Like high school, elementary? Like what were you thinking?
No, I was going to be an elementary school teacher.
Okay.
For sure. Teaching the foundation, teaching the basics. I found that most of the teachers that I kept in contact with were my teachers sixth grade and below. Because I feel like they see you for the most time. They invest the most time in you. They really build that foundation for you. And I feel like, I think for people in healthcare who go into it because they want to educate and things like that, it's like a natural progression that you want to be a teacher.
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel like that's the reasoning behind it.
So is that what kind of influenced your concentration or your specialty in pediatric practice or?
No, not necessarily. It's interesting because, yeah, I've always seen myself as an elementary school teacher, but I just like kids. I don't like adults. I don't like adults at all. Growing up, I just always liked kids. Like, I tried to find jobs where I was, like, babysitting kids or doing stuff like that. I just always liked kids. And then going through medical school, I said, well, you know, you want to be a pediatrician, but maybe there's another path for you, you know? I said, maybe you'll like surgery. Maybe you'll like OBGYN. Maybe you'll like internal medicine. I went through and I said, no. OBGYN, yeah, the surgical side was cool. And then when the baby came out, I was kind of like, over here sewing up and I'm looking at the baby. I'm like, I gotta be there. But I don't know, I like them. I enjoy them. I think kids say very interesting things. I think they're very honest people. Mm-hmm. You don't really have to beat around the bush. Adults, they come and they lie. They don't do anything they're supposed to do. But you know, if I have a parent come in and I tell you, you know, your child is very sick. They need to take this medication 10 times a day. Mm-hmm. They're gonna say, so what time I need to set my alarm for? Like they actually follow through when it comes to their child. Yeah. Kids are resilient, they bounce back. I like the age group.
That's awesome. So like, let's talk about you when you were a kid and let's unpack growing up in a Caribbean or, you know, household or just growing up in an immigrant household overall. What was that like? Just what would that look like on a day-to-day basis? Take it back to when you were like in middle school or even high school. What did that look like?
Mm-hmm. Middle school, I think, was when I noticed, you know, because growing up, you only know your house. You feel like this is normal. I think the transition into middle school is when I started to understand, you know, my Black American friends. Their household didn't run like my household because you started to, you know, get friends and have friends that would call your house. At this point, we didn't have cell phones. It was landlines. So my Caribbean parents, I think just in general, they were cautious is the word I'll use. My Black American friends, their parents were a lot more lax. Yes, you can go out. Yes, you can sleep over. There was no sleepovers. You weren't sleeping over my house. I wasn't sleeping over your house. When my friends would like call my house, my dad made it very clear. You need to tell your little friends that when they call here, it's no, hi, is Shayna home? Hi, can I speak to Shayna? They need to say good evening.
Yes.
How you doing? And I had to explain to them and they don't get it. And I'm like, I don't know why you have to say this, but you have to say this when you call my house. Or they would call like, you know, 9:30. My parents go, why are they calling here?
That's violation.
Like, what is wrong with
you? That's violation.
Yeah, and I'm like, y'all don't understand. Or, you know, like, let's say, so my parents, you know, we live here in America, but in their house, they're still in their mindset. They're still very much in the Caribbean. So one of the things that struck me as unusual, which I didn't know till people started coming over my house, was for a lot of Caribbean people, Americans, they'll run their AC all day. Caribbean households, that AC is off. Yes. It's there for decoration.
Yes.
So when people come to our house, you know, especially like, even like to this day, you know, my husband Chris, he used to be bigger. So yeah, before he lost weight, he would come up just be sweating bullets. Why don't your parents turn on the AC? This is what they're used to. Mm-mm. Like in our house, cold is like, if the AC is on, it's like 78, 80. My parents are like, whoo,
yeah,
it's cold in here.
Shivering.
We got to turn that off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you go over there and it's hot, it's humid. The windows are open. They frying fish. They got a bunch of fruit trees in the back. They growing mangoes and they cutting sugar cane. And I didn't know this didn't happen in other households. So yeah, there was rules. There was regulations. Mm-hmm. We were cleaning. Friday night, we were cleaning. There was island music playing. Saturday morning, we were waking up. We were cleaning. Yep. We were pulling weeds. That was structure.
Yeah.
That was structure. Christmas morning, you woke up. There wasn't no opening, no gifts. No, we were going to sit down. We were going to pray first.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to open a gift. All my friends was opening gifts the night before, leaving cookies out for Santa. Ooh, there was none of that.
Cookie for who?
I want to be a regular kid for who?
Cookies for Jesus?
I wasn't worried about these gifts. Santa didn't buy
them. Cookies for Jesus? Yes. Jesus don't
for
eat cookies.
Man, there was church. There was pantyhose. There was slits. But none of my friends had to do all of that. Yeah, there was no nails. There was no nothing. My friends was wearing acrylic. No, there was no polish. It was very, very strict.
Mm-hmm.
Very strict. That was some crossover. Like my mom made sure, you know, I'm your parent. I'm not your little friend. And that crossover was definitely there with my Black American friends. But there was a lot of rules and restrictions and ways to move that my other friends didn't have to move like at all. It's your normal.
How did you balance it? Like, so when you were outside, you knew like you were in this different world where like your Black American friends had these different ways of moving, you know, navigating life and they had a different lifestyle and expectations. But how did you balance being in your household where you basically, when you were at home, you back in St. Lucia compared to then when you were outside, you were American. So how were you able to navigate those the dual identity, especially being born in the States?
Right. I will say, growing up in South Florida, you have an unfair advantage. There's a bunch of us here. So it's not like, you know, I wasn't in Idaho where everybody's like, you're the only Caribbean family. There's tons of Caribbean families. So even if you're Black American, there's a lot that you like about Caribbean culture. There's a lot that you respect about Caribbean culture. Yeah. So I will say down here, it's more of a melting pot. So you're a lot more open to certain things. Like, you know, there's like for instance, we have a big Caribbean population. We have a huge Hispanic population.
Yeah.
There's a place down here called La Granja. And it's like this Hispanic place. And, you know, Black people always go there. They say, La Granja. I'm going to La Granja. And it's like, no, it's La Granja. But everybody goes there. It's a big melting pot. So I will say, even if people don't understand, they respect. So, you know, they may not have understood everything, but they definitely respected, you know, this is my culture. This is not going to happen in my house. You can't call my house at this time. It really wasn't difficult because there was a lot of us. There's a huge, you know, Caribbean population. So I think it kind of grew on people, even if it wasn't the way that they grew up. A lot of people down here are very accepting that there's different ways of life and different cultures. And, you know, even all the time, they love the food and all that stuff. Like all the Black Americans down here, we love oxtails and we love da-da-da. And I'm like,
Because
you know the difference. A Caribbean person gonna say oxtail. An American person gonna say oxtails. We love it the same, but we know there's a difference.
Yeah.
So it's still an appreciation. So even though they knew, you know, because as soon as they would meet my parents and my parents spoke, oh, where's your parents from? They hear that accent. We know they're not from here.
Yeah.
But it's an appreciation down here. So even though there's differences, you still feel very much accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very much.
So you didn't necessarily need to have like, you didn't have to, you, since you have such a large Caribbean based community, did you have people you can commiserate with? Because for me growing up, especially with African immigrant community, very similar to you when I was in my household, it was Nigeria, Ghana-ish, and then like, you know, when I was outside, I was American-ish, right? And so, but I had other people that I could be able to like commiserate with, who also kind of grew up in a similar household, had strict parents, you know, the expectations. So like, mm-hmm. were you able to have similar people? I mean, you have your cousins, if you have cousins and everything, but did you have, you know, other mates of yours that you were able to, you know, commiserate with about the struggle of growing up immigrant?
Oh yeah. Cause I think the struggle of growing up immigrant is very similar. Mm. It's very similar. So being that, you know, even if you weren't from St. Lucia, if you were from Haiti, if you were, you know, Puerto Rican, if you were Jamaican, if you were Bahamian, everybody kind of went through the same thing. Mm-hmm. There was rules and regulation. There were expectations. Your parents came here to give you a better life. You were going to capitalize on said life. You were going to make something of yourself. It's the same. The struggle was the same, yeah. No matter what island, yeah. No matter how big, how small, there were expectations. They were the same.
Yeah.
And it's funny now to see like all the memes and videos, you know, people make, you know, growing up Caribbean, growing up Haitian, growing up. I'm like, wow, we live the same life.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yes.
We live the same. But yeah, it was definitely, even to this day, I can say things. I'm like, yeah, certain people, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Facts.
Exactly. So definitely, yeah, misery loves company. I had a lot of misery down here.
And a lot of company. So how did, in this case, what were the expectations for you? So not just going into like how you went your career path, were they what expectations were set for you by your peoples?
Now, I will say, as far as career paths, mm-hmm. my parents were a little bit different,
okay.
because I think they knew that they came and brought us here so that we could have a better opportunity. And I think for them, it was just important that we capitalize on that opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of immigrants, families and situations that I'll hear, they'll say, you know, you have options. You can be a doctor, you can be a lawyer, you can be, you know, this is that. My parents never really said that to us, you know. They kind of just said, you just had to really do something with yourself. So my mom, she was just very supportive, like throughout everything, very, very supportive. When I said I wanted to go into healthcare, she said, well, you don't really like blood. Maybe you should be a lawyer. You like to argue with people. Maybe you should be a lawyer. And then I started reading all the Supreme Court cases. I said, this is not it. This is not for me. Not for me. My dad was a little bit more stringent. He's very into like music. Mm. So I think in the back of his head, he wanted like a Jackson 5 situation. So he made sure, he said, everybody must play an instrument. You must. I don't care what you play, but you're going to play something.
Okay.
He wanted to have like a little family band. So all of us started out playing piano. And I stuck with it. Middle school, I went to performing arts magnet school. So I had to go and audition and play the piano. Okay. And I was good, but I always knew I wasn't going to be a concert pianist or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So my sister played the piano. My brother played the piano. And then they kind of branched off. And, you know, my brother and sister played the saxophone. My brother ended up playing the drums. And mm-hmm. my sister ended up doing it like in high school, marching band, all that stuff. So by the time I finished middle school, I said, I really don't want to play the piano no more, mm-hmm. you know, no big deal. But I knew I wanted to go to medicine. So I said, well, can I go to the, you know, medical magnet high school? And my mom and dad said, okay. And my dad thought that I was still like somehow going to maintain playing the piano. I just kind of let it all go. And then I did good in high school. So they really couldn't say anything.
Right.
Then I went away to college. They really couldn't say anything. Yeah. So as long as I was doing well yeah. in whatever I was doing, they really didn't care what I did.
Yeah.
So I will say I didn't really have the career stress from my parents. And I mean, for them, I mean, it panned out pretty good. I ended up becoming a doctor. My sister is a PICU nurse, and my brother went to the military. So he's a veteran for the Air Force, and he's a firefighter now. So,
wow.
And they really never made us do anything. They was just kind of like there.
Yo, that's awesome. And especially the whole, like the musical, you know, aspect of things, that was one that was, I wish my parents were a little bit more like emphatic about. Because mm-hmm. I mean, piano was, I love the piano and I wanted to play it, you know, more and more. When I immigrated here, you know, it just kind of faded away because ultimately the goal was, you know, I need to get up out of here because my parents are too strict. Like, I was like, I need to go to college and be whatever. Yeah, forget this piano. I'll catch up with it later. But that is something that like like, can you read the notes and can you read?
Yeah, I can read notes, but I haven't played in years. Like if I go to my parents' house, my dad currently has two keyboards set up like in the garage. Mm. And now like my brother has a son and my sister has a son. And when they go over, my dad gets them to the garage. So I think he's still like banking on like making a band.
Somebody gonna make it in this band.
Yeah, and he's like in a band. Like Friday nights, he meets up with his friends and they have band practice. I've never seen said band perform, but they have practice. So I do feel like they somehow try to live their dream through you, but yeah. My parents were never like, you have to do this, you have to do that. They were always, super supportive, always.
Yo, that's what's up.
That was a plus. That was a plus, because I have heard terrors.
Oh, yeah. There are many of us who did not have said luxury of that support. Heard the
terrors. You have two or three choices. Yes. What you going to do?
Yes.
Yes. And I didn't have that. We were actually allowed to do, you know, as far as career, what we wanted to do.
Okay. And so then what were the expectations like for you as a young woman growing up in an immigrant household? Was that, you know, was it different than others, or was it very, you know, were the parents a little bit more laxed, or because they were in a new country?
Oh, no. Caribbean parents are never laxed. Not like that. And I would definitely say my experience is going to be different from my sister's experience, from my brother's experience, because I'm the eldest girl.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of responsibility when you are the eldest girl in an immigrant household.
Yes.
Like, it just, I mean, the stress.
Yes, love.
The stress, because you got to keep everybody in line when your parents, you know, we were latchkey kids. Now you can't leave these kids home.
Oh, no.
I was a latchkey kid. Stay here. You don't open the door.
Don't answer the phone.
We were cooking. We were cleaning.
Yep.
You can't do that. Wait. It was responsibility. Hold on. I knew that if my brother or sister did something, I was going to get it.
Yo, I got to interrupt by just saying, okay, we grew up in a time where, as latchkey kids, right? For those who don't know what latchkey kids are, you can either A, look it up, or just understand that these were kids who got to stay at home because their parents were working and they got to stay at home, and they were pretty much responsible for the household, especially me being the oldest as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I always remember from being a latchkey kid was, you know, your parents would call you. They call the house. You don't pick up. And they'd be like, hey, pick up the phone. It's that. It's mom. Pick up the phone. Like, was that your experience too? Like, your parents had to be like, yo, Shayna.
Everything is okay.
Yeah. Shayna, they'd be like, Shayna, it's me. Pick up the phone. And they'd be like, you have to pick up that phone, because they'd be like, where were you? Like,
yes, exactly. They want to know something's not wrong. And for me, my mom, she always, anytime she like left a message, and she, to this day, she does this. I keep telling her, you don't have to do this. Say, hey, it's mommy. The time is now 7:35. I know what time you left the message. Just tell me what you want. But yeah, you had to answer, otherwise they thought something is wrong. And if anything goes wrong, it's me. Mm. My brother does something wrong. We all getting whooped when they get home. Mm-hmm. Everybody.
Yeah.
So I had to keep them in line. It was definitely a responsibility to be in the eldest in an immigrant household.
Yeah.
So everything had to be together. Everything had to be done. Your homework had to be done. Your rooms needed to be clean. My parents were very much of the mindset, you know, you wake up in the morning, you make your bed, because you never know.
Yep.
Something's going to happen.
Yep.
You're going to get in an accident and somebody's going to need to bring you back. And I said, well, if I'm in an accident, who's going to care if I didn't make my bed? Nobody. Well, you can't wear holy panties and you can't, they're going to cut my clothes off anyways if something happens. But to this day, I wake up and I make that bed. And I make sure, my husband the other day had some socks with like some holes. Hey, babe, you think I should throw these away?
Mm-mm.
Yes. What is wrong with you? You have to hold it. It's just small. No, throw it away.
It's a waste.
Throw it away. Yeah. What if somebody sees you and they assume you come from nothing?
Now you're embarrassing.
You cannot embarrass.
Now you're embarrassing us.
No, you're huge.
That's huge
there
for us.
No embarrassing.
Mm-mm. We don't play that.
None at all.
Immigrants don't play. No. Black immigrants, we came too far. We do not play that embarrassment. Don't embarrass us.
To be embarrassed. Exactly.
I
had a conversation with my mother-in-law the other day, and my husband's family is Jamaican. And she was telling me how upset she was at Chris's sister, because every day before school, she would work like two jobs, make sure they had everything. Every day before school, she would give Chris's sister money for lunch. And she found out that she would go to school and she would just eat the school lunch for free and she would save the money. She said, oh my God, you made these people think
we're poor. You think we're poor? We're not poor.
In her head, she was being smart. Like, I'm just going to eat school lunch. It's fine. I'm going to just pocket my money. Mm. Oh, the embarrassment.
Mm-mm.
Oh, yeah. You cannot embarrass an immigrant family. So everything was very straight and narrow. I was a good kid just by default. I'm very type A. So I was a rule follower. Mm. But yeah, them immigrant parents, they made sure you're not going to embarrass me. You're going to do everything properly. You walk in, you're going to say good evening.
Yes.
They offer you food. You're going to say, no, I'm not hungry. We eat already.
Yep.
Growling.
Oh, Shayna, you taking me back, sis. You taking me back. Oh my God, yo, you're giving me the flashbacks, man. The transnational flashback. Like, that was that food thing. It was a real thing. Where it was like, don't. By the time you come into this house, don't eat anything. Like, you're not hungry. You understand?
You're not hungry. But I am.
Left in the house, because at the end of the day, it was like, oh my bad. My dad used to be one of those people. Like, when you're leaving for going to someone's house, you better eat. eat now. Because if you don't eat now, don't go in there and don't say, even if they ask you, just say, no, you're fine. Thank you. Like, oh my God, yo, it's so crazy. And if you were to even try, like, to eat it, when you get home, your parents give you that look like, they don't say anything. When you get home, you're in trouble. Because you're embarrassing us. Do you think we're...
Get out of my face.
Do you think we're poor? Like, why do you think we're begging for people? Like,
we didn't feed you.
Oh, my God. Wow.
The trauma bonding is real. It's real. But you know what? I wouldn't trade it.
Me neither.
Like, looking back, I think it built character.
Yo, listen. I do the same. Even now in my household, the way I am with my kids, especially, like, my oldest, the same thing. And I try to explain to them, her particularly, because she's at that age where she can understand things. But like, when you come into a space, you greet people, right? Like, it's not because you're just trying to force you, but it these things are character building skills that allow you to be personable and respect, like respectable. When you walk into a space and you greet and you just say, how are you? You never know what type of conversations, you never know what type of interactions can lead to opportunities. You don't know. So and it's always more rewarding to just be respectful and courteous compared to just coming in and not saying nothing, especially when you come into somebody's space. Hold on. So greeting, making your bed, like tidying. Listen, every day I go into my child's room and I'm like, what is this? 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 Like, pick this up. And I know for her, she's just like, what is this? This guy's being petty. And I'm like, no, like this, you got to get into that habit now, because is going to help you when we're not here and you're the oldest you already know that, you know what come with being the oldest, this is the responsibility, but ultimately you also know that when you're the ones keeping them in line, but when you all get older, you the boss. You know what it is like when you say something, most times they're gonna be like, yes ma'am, like, because they know what y'all went through when y'all were shorties growing up. And that's why I try to explain to my, you know, to Alicia, is like, You right now, you got to understand, you're doing all of this, but when you get, you want independence, you want freedom, right? This is how you get it. When you're able to do for yourself and you can be able to take care of others, like, this is true freedom. Like, when you get to the stage where nobody's bothering you, you can do your own thing, right? But if you can't do that, I wouldn't change any of my upbringing for the world because I was resilient. I knew how to take insults. You could tell me, you call me whatever you want. You could call me whatever you want to. I'm going to get this. It don't matter. I've heard it worse from my peoples, right? And they still fed me, took care of me. It don't matter. I heard worse. My mom's called me things. I was just like, do you love me?
For me, that was my dad. You have tough skin.
Yeah, you have to. Because if not, like, it's like, and I tried to explain to, like, you know, this generation is different, but as far as just explaining, like, you got to be able to push through that adversity, because if somebody comes in and talks to you, it don't matter. Like, can you still get the job done? And if you can, then none of that stuff matters, because those insults turn to compliments, especially with Black immigrants. They insult you 2 hours later. Hey, baby. Like, you'd be like, wait a minute. you just called me the worst thing. You just called me a scumbag, you know, for not taking out not washing the dishes. And now you're just like, sweetheart, my love, are you hungry? Are you okay? Like,
leave me alone. Leave me alone. No, my mom thinks, she would say, your eyeballs are so big and they're so white. So my cousin had a little baby. And of course, you know, babies, they so small that the eyeballs look so big. Anytime she sees somebody with big eyeballs, Lord Jesus, here she go. Eyeballs look like yours. I'm like, oh God, here we go. Here we go. So you're right. Can't nobody tell you nothing you ain't heard.
Nothing. You'd be like, I've been through it all, man. So like, okay. So then when you were coming up, what type, did you receive any type of, I would say warning, but just any type of, were you instructed to behave a certain way towards Black Americans? Like, what was that relationship or expectations like from, like, set by your peoples?
Right. No, we weren't instructed to behave a certain way, but I think, and it's bad because it's a stereotype. I think the stereotype is that, you know, immigrants have manners. And I think they stereotype that Black Americans don't have manners, you know? Yeah. So I think they always said, you know, you treat everybody kind, but they did expect that, let's say I brought my Black American friend over the house, they did expect that they're probably not going to greet them, they're going to have to tell them something. So I feel like my parents' expectations was always that Black Americans are not mannerful.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have culture, they don't have discipline and things like that.
Yeah.
But they were still very kind, very accepting and things like that. So, you know, if we were going somewhere, we didn't have to act any differently. But I do think that was their overriding train of thought.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
You know,
I,
not to say we're better, but definitely different upbringing.
More cultured, you know? Right? It just felt like there was that, yeah. that idea of having a culture, that. I think was a
exactly.
big...
Exactly, having a culture or something like that. Because for them, you know, Black American was, you're not doing good in school, you have no focus, your pants are hanging off the back of, you know, of your butt, and why you gotta do this, and for them, it was just a bad connotation with it. I'm like, that's not everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. So over the years, they've become much, much better. So we bring people over, it's no longer like, oh, okay, you know, let's say hi, whatever. They've been much, much better. But I think definitely growing up, they definitely had that stigma that, ooh, when we get here, you know how it's gonna be.
Yeah.
Gonna have bulls, they're gonna have collard greens, and okay. And I'm sure when they come here, they don't want what you cook either. Yeah.
Okay, so then, like, before I get into, like, I want to talk a little bit more about, like, your marriage to someone that's from the Caribbean as well, and how that, uh-huh. I mean, especially his people from the Caribbeans, but, like, I want to know your connection with St. Lucia, like, and your family's connection. How often did you go back? Do you still got family there? You know, like, what was that experience like for you growing up and even now?
So growing up, I think this is the expectation when you immigrate to America and you go back. The expectation is when we go back, growing up, we went a lot. And now we don't go as much. So the last time I went was 5 years ago when my grandmother passed, because we shipped her body to bury it there. And when I started residency in 2014, my family had a family reunion there. And I couldn't go. It was my first month of residency, and they were not letting up on me getting any time to go. So we're planning another family reunion next year. So we'll be back next year. I took my husband there 2 years ago for his birthday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so we went, but we didn't see my family. We stayed on a different side of town, like the touristy side.
Okay.
So he didn't see, like, a lot of my family at that point. But next year, we'll be seeing a lot of family.
Okay.
So going down, the expectation is, you live in America, you're rich. When you come down here, you bring us
gifts,
money,
you bring
food,
gifts. Yes.
Yeah. You send a barrel before you go, because you're not going to be able to fit the amount of things that we're asking you for, you know? So when we went, it was just kind of like, you know, oh, they're American. And I think for us, and this is a disservice to my parents, and I think they're trying to correct it now. So in St. Lucia, they speak a broken French. They call it patois.
Patois.
So it's very similar to, like, Haitian Creole.
Mm-hmm.
And when my parents moved here, my dad felt like, oh, it's a broken language, you know, we shouldn't pass it on type of situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So they didn't teach me, my brother, and my sister. So when we go down there, it's kind of like we're outcasts, because everybody's speaking and we have no clue what they're saying.
Yeah.
They could be calling us a dog. We have no idea. So it's always like a little bit uncomfortable, because first they're looking at you, you're American, you're rich, you got this,
oh,
you got that.
God.
And then we can talk about you. You don't know what we're saying.
Oh,
so here I'm very St. Lucian. There, I'm very American.
Yeah. Yeah. Yo, see, what you just described, sis, is the, like, quintessential transnational experience. Especially for the second, like, first gen American, second gen immigrant, mm-hmm. right? Like, what you, I like, my God, like, for me, who's essentially a 1.5er because I came here at a young age.
Exactly.
Right?
You were at least born there.
Yeah, I was born there. But even there, like, the thing was, even growing up in Nigeria, like, my parents were one of those who believed in being very aristocratic, right? And so my mother particularly was keen on, like, you don't need to worry about speaking a language. Like, speak the Queen's English, right? That's going to take you far. That's going to, so, like, learning the language, I understand. I'm paternalistically, I'm Igbo, right? That's the side I'm supposed to, like, my name is Kalechi. I'm supposed to take on that side. I don't understand a lick of Igbo, right? Like, and I grew, and Lagos is very Yoruba. And so because of that, I understood a little bit. My mom spoke it a little bit. And then moving here, my OG spoke it here. And so I understand Yoruba, but I can't speak Yoruba the way I'd like to, because Yoruba, I never got the practice, because they just said, talk English,
right.
Learn English, go far in life, be the doctor, you know, you're supposed to be.
Yeah, their plan was for you to go.
Yeah.
Be great. Don't worry, speak it here.
But then I'm like, yo, I have a huge, you know, love and, you know, and have such pride in my culture that I want to retain, sustain, and pass it on to my, you know, my successors, my descendants. And I'm like, man, I can't teach my kids nothing, right? Like, now I gotta, you know, go.
Yeah, it just gets watered down. Every generation's getting watered down. You're like, no.
Yeah. So I'm like, so is that something that you've thought about, as far as, like, man, like, the language, like, how are you going to pass that on? Like, what
do you? It's hard for me now. So, like, for instance, my sister, her son is 4. He spends every weekend at my parents' house, every weekend. And they'll start speaking to him. So like he'll come in and my dad would just talk to him in Patois and he'll answer back and it sounds so good because you know when you're young you pick up on the fluency and the intonation and stuff so well. So my mom, they went to St. Lucia a few months back. Her uncle had passed away and they came back and they gave us this little book on like common St. Lucian phrases. Mm-hmm. And they were like, you know, we think you should have a Zoom class. You guys as the cousin, so that you guys can learn to speak, you know, by next year when we go back for the reunion. And I said, well, who's going to teach the class? Like, that's dumb. None of us speak it. We're just going to get on and look at this little book that's not going to really teach us a lot. And even with them being here, there's things that they've forgotten. So the other day, my mom and my aunt were going back and forth. They're like, how do you say happy birthday again? Born. And they're like, oh my God, we've been gone too long. Yeah. So even with them being here, it's fading out. And I'm like, yeah, if you don't teach, you know, this next generation, it just gets further and further and further. But that's something I really, really wish. Because, you know, like you, even if I didn't speak it fluently, at least I would understand that people were talking about me, you know? And being that it's so close to Haitian Creole, for me, being in healthcare, I would have an advantage, you know? Because I see a lot of Haitian patients and I'm in there with that translator app, like, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it would have still given me an edge, you know, or something that, you know, but I mean, you know, they did that.
Yeah. All right. So a couple pop questions real quick. You got a WhatsApp account?
Do I have a WhatsApp?
You got a WhatsApp?
Of course I have a WhatsApp. Let me tell you, every day my dad will send me messages to my WhatsApp account.
Yes. And is it like
in
a mass?
America, you have an iPhone. Send me an iMessage.
Do you get mass messages WhatsApp from your cousins and like random chain letters?
Like, oh, yeah. Stop WhatsApping me. I'm not using this unless I'm out of the country.
Yeah.
Stop it. You didn't respond to my message. You sent it on WhatsApp.
Yep. My mama still talked to me on WhatsApp. She sent me all the things on WhatsApp. I'm like, yo, we have regular texts. You have an iChat. Like, talk to me on the blue bubble. She don't want to talk to me on the blue bubble. She want to talk to me on WhatsApp. It's so crazy.
WhatsApp. And then I think, I think especially, is it my husband's mom? She'll call like, what's up?
Yep.
What's
up? Oh my God, yo, we live parallel lives. And I love this conversation. I love having these conversations because like, it just reminds me of the fact that like, we are very connected despite being disconnected intentionally through the diaspora and through history. But just the fact that no matter how far we went, like, we still
Are the same.
Yes, the roots are still the same and they're so strong. And you know, the goal of my work in this podcast is to kind of just bring that to light and just, you know, show that, you know, we have an ability to navigate these two worlds, and that's what connects us, and that's what I hope can connect those who, like, you know, African American brothers and sisters who want to reconnect with the islands or the, you know, the motherland, whatever the case may be. All right, but okay, favorite food. What type of food do you eat that's from the homeland?
So funny story, when I met my husband, you know, we were just having small talk. And that was one of the conversations we had. He said, what's your favorite food? I said, oxtail and rice. I said, what's your favorite food? He said, oxtail and rice. I said, well, there we have it, by far. Oxtail, rice and peas, fried plantain.
Oh, wait. You said plan what?
Fried plantain.
Plan what?
Wait a minute. Don't tell me you say plantain.
Absolutely. We are plantain gang over here.
No.
We are plantains. It's plantains.
No way.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So here you say plantain. They're like, no, really? It's plantain.
What? What is a plantain? What are you
plantain?
So
plantain chips. Not plantain chips.
This is like the age old debate. I was just like, plant, because me and Wanda be like, what's the difference? I'm like, listen, it's a real thing that they do. Like, and if you want to know where people are from, that's a huge, like, if you want to know if you're someone talking to someone, like someone that's from like the actual continent, you just be like, okay, plantain or plantain. And they'd be like, if they say plantain, you're from the island. If you say plantain, you're from the continent. And it's very easy. But yeah, no, okay. So you said rice. You said rice. So, and another real thing, right? You said, is it rice and peas or peas and rice?
You know what? For us, it's rice and peas.
Okay.
The only people I hear say peas and rice down here are Bahamians.
Okay.
So peas and rice is a very Bahamian thing, but every other Caribbean island is rice and peas.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I figured. I mean, because Jamaicans don't play about that. That's how you know what's real or not. Like, it's
rice and peas.
All right. You mentioned soca music?
Mm-hmm. Soca, for sure.
Okay.
So St. Lucia is big on soca, calypso, for sure. Soca for calypso. Sure.
Okay. All right. Now you mentioned your husband's from his people's is from Jamaica. And so what is that what is that connection like for y'all as a family with the homeland there? Like, what is that lifestyle? How does that influence you all as a household and your growth and your plans? Is it built around the culture? How are you all planning that with your Caribbean influences?
Well, for us, it was easy. It's definitely easy talking to someone that's Caribbean versus talking to someone who's Black American. There's a whole lot less you have to explain because there's so many similarities island to island. Mm. For us, it's definitely, you know, flying out of Fort Lauderdale or Miami, it's cheaper for us to go to Jamaica. So I've known my husband 6 years. We went to St. Lucia once. We've been to Jamaica 10 times. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot easier to say, you know what, we could see ourselves investing in property in Jamaica because it would just be easier to get to,
right. You
know, not for any other reason. Food-wise, everything is pretty much the same. Culture-wise, everything is the same. It's very, very easy. Mm. That's something that I found. You know, I met him and everything was pretty seamless. He's very clean. If I'm not here in the morning, he makes the bed. You know, it's exactly like how things worked in my house.
Right.
So there was very little that I really had to explain. There's very little we had to tweak when we moved in together. And yeah. I'm like, wow, you were raised like me.
Yeah.
You know, there's very little that had to be explained. You know, you come in the house. You don't go lay in the bed and your house clothes. You know, there's very few things.
Yeah, you change your clothes.
it just, you know, and I think for him, my husband was actually born in Jamaica.
Okay.
He lived there until he was like 2 and his mom moved here and was working to bring them over. So then, you know, brought him over. And for him, he feels like he's just like a super Jamaican. I'm like, you were there for 2 years. How much could you really have accumulated in 2 years? I remember bathing in the bucket. I'm like, you don't remember that. You don't remember that. But so here, I remember. Yeah, I remember. I'm like, okay, whatever. Whatever. So yeah, I appreciate his culture. I think for me, the only thing is that, and this is just, I have a friend from St. Kitts and Nevis, and we're what we call, you know, small island massive.
Yeah.
Because growing up, there was really, you're Caribbean. If you're not Haitian, you were Jamaican. Mm. None of the smaller islands existed, yeah. You know, and now people are traveling and there's carnival everywhere. So now, you know, people know St. Lucia and Barbados and Trinidad and, you know,
yeah.
And Grenada and Dominica. But before, all of those small islands, they didn't matter.
Yeah.
They didn't matter.
Yeah.
If you were from the islands, you were either Hispanic or you were Jamaican or you were Haitian. And growing up, being Haitian wasn't cool. So everybody wanted to be Jamaican. So, you know, as soon as people would hear my parents speak, they say, oh, y'all Jamaican. I say, no, we're not Jamaican. There's other islands besides Jamaica. And, you know, we actually, my husband and I, we got in an argument one time because we went to Home Depot. We were pricing out refrigerators. Mm. Didn't need a refrigerator, but my husband is like Terry Crews on the Matrix. Mm-hmm. So he can't turn down a good deal.
Yep.
So we're looking at refrigerators like, oh, there's a good deal. And she had on her mask and she's sitting down upset. And she starts talking to my husband and my husband starts spitting patois. She goes, as soon as she hears him, she sits up. Oh, you are Jamaican? And now she wants to help us. Mm-hmm. She takes her mask off because now all of a sudden we don't have COVID because he's Jamaican, you know? So they start talking. She's helping us. She's showing the inside of every fridge and this, that. And then, you know, she kind of starts talking about food and stuff like that. And then she looks at me and she says, oh, she don't understand. She a yardie. So here, you're a yardie if
American,
you're from, you know?
Yeah, Black American.
If you're American, wow. You're a yardie.
So that's the name. Really?
Yeah, a yardie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she a Yankee. Because everybody Yankee. Goes to New York yeah. and da da da.
Yep.
You a Yankee. I said,
Yankee.
Okay. That's, so she starts talking. Mm-hmm.
We're connected, man. This is crazy.
You know when you come in, everybody goes through New York. Mm-hmm. You a Yankee.
You're a Yankee.
So yeah, she don't understand. She a Yankee. So my husband was like, well, no. And she's like, so where you from? And I said, St. Lucia. And she goes, even worse.
Bougie.
And then my husband laughed and kept having conversation. That was it. Mm. I said, we're not going back. Her name was Audrey. We're not going back. We're not buying anything from her. Because when she said that, you know, and basically put your island above mine,
right.
You didn't defend me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, she was just being funny. I said, no. Because everybody, you know, you have to be able to represent where you're from and be proud of where you're from.
Absolutely.
Just because you're, you know, African does not mean you're automatically Nigerian.
Yep.
You can be Cameroonian.
Yep.
You can't just assume, yep. You know, you're Nigerian. No, not necessarily.
Yep. And you know, that's
so it's been easy, except for that. The fact that once they meet him and he's Jamaican, everybody assumes I'm Jamaican. Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that's like frustrating, right? Because it's something, again, for me, I'm starting to unpack those intra-racial type of intra-racial country type of differences, right? Like where it's more so, hey, I'm from, everybody is from West Africa. You're like, yo, I'm from Sierra Leone. It's like, what's that? Right. And we was like, exactly. Oh, are you Nigerian or are you Ghanaian? Right. Or, you know, like exactly. People don't even talk about, I mean, if you're not from Ethiopia, it's like Eritrean. What's that? Right. Yeah, like Eritrean, Somalian.
Exactly.
So it's so interesting how they have they create these contrasts that mm-hmm. impact, you know, how we interact and treat each other. Right. So I didn't mm-hmm. even know. Right. I used to always think the islands were just Jamaica and Haiti. And I didn't even know, like I had one of my colleagues from when I was in upstate New York is from an island called Montserrat. Right,
mm-hmm.
right, and small island. I was like, baby girl, I have to go find a flag. I was like, oh, she's like, it's a volcano there. That's all we got. I said, yo, what? She said, yeah, it's right across from Antigua. It's right next to Antigua, mm-hmm. right? And I just like, I've never heard. I didn't understand where these places were.
right.
Barbados. You know what I mean? Like all these places, I had no idea.
Barbados didn't get big until Rihanna. Thank God for Rihanna.
Yeah. You know, and so like, what is so that? So did you have to deal with that part? Like, especially when you can't, when you're in college, you know, when you're in college, you get to these like Caribbean student associations, you start finding your little mm-hmm. cliques and you have these different cultural groups. Like, did you have to deal with those types of interactions or was it just when you were, you know, with your husband in that Home Depot situation?
The same, because in college, I'm sure y'all had a CSA, like a Caribbean mm-hmm, Student mm-hmm. Association, and they always have, you know, we're notorious for having flag parties.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So sometimes when you get there, you don't bring a flag, and they're handing out flags, and of course, they toss everybody a Jamaican flag. Oh, not that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's very much, I might have to bring my flag because y'all not going to have it, or, you know, what flag is that? Now it's so much more well-known that you don't really run into that.
Okay.
But yeah, growing up, it was very much, I need to bring my flag because they're not going to have it there. You wow. know, we had a place called Lauderhill Mall, which is like very, very Caribbean. You go there, you're not going to have it. Not going to have it. They had a little boxing glove that you hang up on the little mirror, mm-hmm. the rear view mirror. And they had, you know, all types of stuff. Very rare to find a St. Lucian one. All the smaller islands, and I get it. It's a, you know, a production thing. I'm not going to make a lot of these if it's a small island and they're not really selling like mm-hmm. that. So I get it, but, you know, it's definitely gotten better. Okay. I will definitely say that.
All right. All right. So look, let's shift and talk about your... two things. I want to talk a little bit about your traveling, your passion for traveling, like where you've been, what you love about it, and all the things you're doing. You're getting big on Instagram and TikToking it, right? So I want to put that out there as well. And then we can kind of wrap up by talking about your pediatric passions and everything that involves that. But traveling, what sparked this whole like travel life and travel blog that you got going on?
I actually like to travel, but the thing about going into medicine is delayed gratification.
Mm.
So you spend so much time in school. You got to be here. You got to be here. You really don't have the time to really travel or go anywhere, you know? And growing up, we had passports, but we only went to the Caribbean. You know, we never really went anywhere else. My parents never took us to like Europe, Africa. We never went anywhere else. We just went to the Caribbean. Mm. That was it. Came back home. So after I got out of residency, I had some downtime. I had just started working. I had a lot of vacation and I met my husband and my husband was very open to traveling. So we kind of just, I think as soon as I graduated residency, he says, you know, I want to take you on a trip. So he took me to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
So we planned to go to Paris and we went there and, you know, he's very big on not going somewhere and, you know, renting a car, getting Uber. He's very big on living like the locals.
Mm-hmm.
So we took the train and, you know, I was like, this is going to be bad. We don't speak French. Thank you, parents. You know, this is going to be real bad, but we figured everything out. Then we ended up, you know, taking a flight one day, going to London. And we were like, you know, this is cool. Like, it actually worked. We should do this more often.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I started finding was the way his schedule was set up and the way my schedule was set up, because at that time I was what they call a float.
Okay.
So I was contracted to work a certain number of days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point I was working 3 days and then I had to do 2 Saturdays for the month. But I could work the days anyhow I wanted to work. So if I wanted to, I could work... Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of this week, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday the next week. And then I could be off for like a set of like 8 days altogether before I had to come back to work and work my next 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
So being that my schedule was set up like that, I would find cheap flights. Because the trick with finding cheap flights, you have to be available at odd times.
Mm.
And because the way my schedule was and the way his schedule was, we could literally just pick up on a Tuesday and go. Just based on where we needed to go. So we started finding cheap tickets and we just started going places. And a lot of the travel that we did were like down season. Like my birthday is in December. So we've gone a lot of places just because it's cheap to go places in December.
Right.
So we went to Italy. We went to Amsterdam, all in December because it's cold. Nobody really wanted to go in those times.
Yeah.
So we went to Dubai, and we booked, like, Dubai, we booked so last minute because we got a really, really good deal. The hotel we booked, let's say we had an overnight flight to Dubai. So we were flying out of Miami. Our flight was at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. I remember my mom's church is close to my house. So she went to church. She came to my house at noon. We had not booked a hotel yet. So we went on, found a cheap hotel, booked it. So we were just really, I mean, it just kind of worked.
Yeah.
We were both pretty free spirits. We both had time that we could play around with. We both didn't really get stressed out if things didn't go. You know, like, I'm the planner, so I would plan more so ideas. I'd like to go to Dubai. I'd like to go to Burj Khalifa. I'd like to go to Miracle Gardens, but I wasn't strict on how it had to happen.
Okay.
So once we got there, we just did whatever made more sense. If we were in the area, hey, how about we go here? And you say, was there anything else on your list that you wanted to do? So I think that's what made it work the most for us. And we're both pretty flexible.
Yeah.
So date-wise, place-wise, I'll go anywhere. I've been trying to get him to go to Arizona. He's giving me a little pushback. I saw a cheap flight there and I was like, let's go. But yeah, we'll go anywhere. We'll go to New Orleans for a day. We'll do it. I mean, we came to Chicago to see y'all.
Yeah.
Just because we found a cheap ticket. So I think for us, it's really just finding a good deal, which for him works. And then just getting to see places. You know, I understand that our parents gave us an opportunity that they didn't have, but they didn't give us the opportunity to travel.
Mm.
And I think for us one day, for our future kids, we would love to give them that opportunity to travel.
Yeah.
You know, after they go on summer vacation, like even my patients in clinic, I say, what are your plans for the summer? Thinking they're going to say, I'm going to summer camp. I'm spending 3 weeks in Europe. I'm like, my parents never did. But again, my parents were not in the position. My parents came here to give me an opportunity.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to set yourself up so you can show your kids more than you had the opportunity to see.
Yeah.
So right now, while we have the time, we have the freedom, we're traveling the world. I'll go anywhere that's cheap.
Yeah.
Take me.
Yo, I remember hearing y'all found like a ticket to New Orleans for like $20. Was that true or was that a myth?
Yep. It was like $16. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yep.
It wasn't Spirit.
Just a random ticket.
Was it Spirit?
It was Spirit.
Oh!
Yeah, it was Spirit. But what we do, we don't pay for bags.
Yeah.
Try not to pay for seats.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just take like a little backpack. We're like, I mean, we don't have to go anywhere. We take a backpack, one pair of shoes, and we're gone. We're not here to, you know, we're here to go.
Yeah,
you
just have a good time.
We're going to be on the road, you know, no big deal. And one big hack that we did, we actually, where were we coming back from? We came from Jamaica last month, and we wanted to sit in the emergency exit on Spirit. So online, I think when we first looked, the seats were $35. We slept on it, went up to $55 a seat, $65. And we could see that nobody was buying the seats.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, should we do it? We waited until we got to the airport, went up to the counter. And because they had to see your passport and stuff, we said, hey, you know, how much for the emergency exit? And she goes, $16. Book it, Danny.
Like,
yeah,
wow.
If you watch it and they're not booked and you go to the airport and then you ask for the seat there, it's going to be cheaper than online.
Yo.
So it's just like little hacks and stuff like that, you know? And I started posting it. I started posting pictures and then I started getting questions, you know, about it. So I'll get questions about old trips. You know, when you went to New Orleans, where did you go?
Yeah.
Hey, we're coming to visit Fort Lauderdale. Where should we eat?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then Sabrina, our mutual friend Sabrina, she would say, you know what? You need to start doing like travel guides. You know, I would buy them. I would pay for them. This is that. So I haven't really looked into that far, but I'm very big on going and memorializing. Because a lot of times you leave and you don't really remember. And I look back and I'm like, wow, we did this. Mm-hmm. We walked. We saw the Eiffel Tower. We saw the Leaning Tower of Pisa. You know, all these things. And I'm like, that's magnificent.
Yeah,
you've definitely seen a lot. And, you know, I'm okay with sharing any information that can help somebody get somewhere cheap. Hey. I'll share it.
Say less, man. I got my notes already, so it's all. Listen, you already know. I'm reaching out. But so then, I mean, I think that's dope, and I think that's powerful what you said as far as the idea of being able to expose your future children, and this younger generation to the world, right? Because mm-hmm. I think that it unlocks a deeper meaning, because you said, you know, our parents immigrated here. Hoping to give us a chance to be better than them. And, mm-hmm. you know, but the idea of being better than them is leaving your homeland and then coming to this new land and hoping that you can flourish. But then the beauty about going further now is that now we have the ability to unlock even more, the ability to be able to even now travel and become global citizens, right? Like, we're not just limited to this country or even the old country.
Exactly.
But now we can have the ability to even expand and spread our wings even, you know, more and further to mm-hmm. be able to let sure that our kids know what the world is, because
exactly.
they can be exposed to other parts and other cultures, that in itself mm-hmm. is a gift. That in itself
Agreed.
Is like, that is a blessing and a skill that like some people don't have the luxury. There are people who are in Agreed. Miami right now and that's all they know. Right. And that's all they don't know.
They don't have a passport. They don't have nothing.
That's all they know. There's people in Chicago nothing, now on like... the South Side who haven't even been barely been up north. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's all they know is the South Side, you know, being on 79th. And so it's something that I feel, especially as Black people, for people who are forced to be in these particular places, I feel like we should have the freedom to be able to travel and explore parts of the world in which we know that our ancestors had some type of role building, some way, shape, or form.
Agreed.
People make it
Agreed.
Seem like slavery was just
unlocked.
Yeah, it's a new level unlocked, man. And so, but one thing that I know you mentioned initially is just as far as even being in healthcare, you have such you say you have a passion for advocating. And so, what type of advocating do you typically do, and what drives you to be an advocate using your expertise and your platform to be able to do what you love?
I think I have a passion for educating my patients for the most part and teaching them to advocate for themselves. Because I feel like in healthcare, you go in as a patient and you're looking at a doctor. And you have so much respect for this doctor. The doctor's just a person. But I feel like a lot of people, they'll cower and they won't ask the questions that they want to ask. They won't get the explanations that they need. And I'm like, that's important. That's important going forward. I feel the healthcare system, in the way that it is, it focuses on volume. But my practice in particular is high volume. The goal is kicking people in and out, high turnover. And I feel like in doing that, people don't get the education that they need. So for instance, if you come in and let's say you have a stomach bug typically consists of three things: fever, diarrhea, vomiting. Let's say you came in with diarrhea. We say, oh, it's probably a stomach bug. Take this, go home, you know, because I'm trying to kick you out for the sake of time. 2 days later, I see them back. Oh, now she started vomiting. And I'm like, if I would have just told you everything that you could have expected, you wouldn't have to come here, waste your time, take up a slot that somebody else could have taken. You know, you would have already known this is part of the disease course. So I like for people to know the full picture. And I'll find that when my patients come in and I explain something to them, they'll say things like, wow, nobody ever explained that to me like that before. Nobody ever took the time to tell me that. You know, my kids had asthma their whole life and nobody ever broke it down to me like that. And I'm like, wow, that's terrible. So in my job, it's so high volume that I found myself getting very overwhelmed, very burnt out. And I said, I got to do something different. I got to go. At that time, we just got a Black pediatric nurse practitioner. But at that time, I was the only chocolate chip there. So in the back of my head, I said, you know, my mental health is suffering, but I can't leave. I'm the only one. I'm the only one who's going to advocate for my patients. Because when they come in and they need things, I know other providers will turn them away. And I'll say, you know what? I'll take the extra time and I'll do it. If I have to take it home and do this paperwork for you, if I have to, you know, call this place myself, you know, I'm going to make sure it gets done for you and help you navigate the system, because you don't know how to navigate the system. So I do take that extra step. It takes me more time. It's more stressful, but they're so appreciative. They're so much more knowledgeable. When they come back in, they say, you know, it was a cold, but I did X, Y, and Z, and then it still wouldn't get better. So then I came in. I say, you see, now you're learning. So I have a patient. She has 5 kids and her youngest got sick the other day. And she went to a different location and it kind of broke me because the provider she saw is the only Black provider there as well. It's a Black male. And she said that, you know, her son was pulling his hair so hard. It was like he was going to pull it off. He had a lot of thick mucus. And the guy was basically like, it's a cold. And she said she walked in the room. He had graphs pulled up on the computer, explained this and that. And at the end, he kind of asked her, like, does that sound okay? And she said, you know, I said, yes, it sounds fine. Because she was like, what was I supposed to say? And I was like, you're supposed to say no. You're supposed to say no. Like, why would you say that? She's like, well, I just felt like he wasn't listening to me anyway. So then I saw her afterwards. She's like, thank you so much. Like, he just really wasn't listening. I'm like, you have to speak up. She's like, but he's a doctor. That's okay. You're there for a service. If you're not getting what you need, you have to speak up. You have to be an active participant. Or I'll have them, like, you know, some of my patients, they'll find me on Instagram or they'll have my personal number, my personal email. They'll call me from the ER. They're not doing X, Y, and Z. Well, ask them if they can do, you know, this. And they say, oh, they did it. It came back positive. And I'm like, you have to really step up for yourself. You know, it's your right. It's your right. You know, so my goal is just to teach them. You can speak up. A doctor is just a person. We're human.
Yeah. So like, you know, that I want to now see, how do you then balance that from, you know, growing up in a Caribbean household with Caribbean, you know, parents, and, you know, we have our remedies. Right. And so as a physician, right, especially when you, I don't know how many patients you have that may be from, you know, Caribbean, that have Caribbean backgrounds, but how do you try to explain and you know, integrate the cultural competency and experience that you have as a member of that community? How do you try to educate like Black immigrant families who may resort to some of these remedies, even your own, and the actual, you know, medical practice that, or what they call Western medicine practice, medicinal practice? How do you balance that?
It's hard. So I tell them the science behind it, but, and I know it's hard because even my own father, he's very big on, oh, you go to work and you just give people all this medicine. He's very like natural. Very, oh my God, you could just be drinking turmeric and this and that. And you go to work and you're giving people all these prescriptions. And I'm like, I feel like there's a place for both. I feel like there's a place for both. So especially with Caribbean people, I have a large Caribbean population. I have to sit them down. Like I have to sit my parents down, you know, and I have to tell them, you know what? I know this is what we normally do, but this is what we do now. And this is the reason why. You can still get away with doing X, Y, and Z, but maybe don't do it so much. Like the whole debate behind giving your baby water. Giving your babies water is a huge Caribbean thing.
Really?
And it's not necessary because babies get water through their formula, through their milk. If you give your baby water, it's mixed, I mean formula, it's mixed with water. If you give your baby breast milk, it's mostly water. So babies don't need free water. It kind of, you know, overpowers the kidneys. So I did like a TikTok about it, and oh, there were so many Caribbean people on there. We need water. And my dad, so when my sister had her son, my dad would go on a tree, cut the coconut, pour the coconut water in the bottle. Oh, he likes it, but he don't need it. He don't need water, much less coconut water. He don't need it, you know? So then I posted the same video on TikTok, and I had a couple people comment, and they basically said that it's the same for African people. Say you must have your water, you know, to cleanse your system or whatever it may be. So I tell them, you know, I understand that you're giving the water to clean it up, but you don't need it. So I don't try to completely like shut them down, but I try to at least change their mindset and help them pull back a little bit, you know? Because once you come in, you just want to shut everything down. No. We're still going to do this.
Exactly.
But I just try to change, you know, the way that they look at it a little bit. Hey, just keep in mind, you can maybe get away with an ounce or two, but you really don't need it, you know?
Okay. And do you think they receive that better than just, you know?
Yeah, shut it down with no water. So yeah, I do think they receive it better. I do. So I just try to pull them back. Or when they come and they say, oh, we're putting baby food in the bottle, I say, well, you know what? I really want you to do it on a spoon instead, just so he's learning those skills. I say, oh, okay, I see. Okay. So I try not to tell him what you're doing is wrong. I try to phrase it like, you could do this instead to help with like development. You know, you should do it this way because it's going to help him in the long run. And they seem to receive it better that way. But yeah, most of my patients are very, very receptive. Very. Yeah. I had a full out argument with the dad one time because, and I see a lot of this because the moms and the dads will come in, and one feels this way and one feels that way, and they're looking for me to be the tiebreaker. So I feel like their baby had like a runny nose, and the mom was very big on using Kleenex, wiping the nose, throwing it away. The dad, who was very Caribbean, was not big on wasting all the Kleenex. So he took like a rag and he safety pinned it on the shirt, and he kept using the rag to wipe the baby's nose, and the mom was not feeling that. You just keep wiping the same snot on his nose. Stop, tell him that you're not supposed to do this. And I was like, well, it probably is a better idea to just use a Kleenex and throw it away. No, but we do this all the time. I get it. I'm just saying. So yeah, some habits are hard to break, but I do kind of, you know, try to be politically correct, not upset the whole household. And, you know, if I see something blatantly wrong, I say it. But if it's something that's not really that harmful, I'll let it go. You feel like you should give your baby an ounce of water? Sure. If we're having a discussion about putting rum on your baby's gums for teething, okay, let's reel it back.
Right. Yeah.
That's really bad. But they usually proceed pretty well.
That, yo, it's just crazy. Again, same lifestyle, just different part of the world. All right, so just to wrap up, because I've taken like almost an hour of your time, which I appreciate. But I know you got other lives to save, at least your own, if you're going to be at home, get some rest. But, you know, I want to know overall, with everything, taking into consideration your upbringing, your passions, what you have, like where you're currently at and where you're hoping to be, like, what do you want your legacy to be? What do you want your impact, you know, to be? And how does your culture play a role with that?
Well, I feel like coming in and being part of an immigrant family, you're very proud of where you came from. Yeah. You know, whatever you're doing, you know you're doing it to make your family proud. So I know that when I go to work every day, I'm making my family proud. And my patients tell me without a doubt, oh my God, I'm sure your parents are so proud of you. So I already know, you know, especially my Hispanic patients. Mm. Your parents are so proud of you, you know. So I think as far as my legacy, I just want to know that I was able to impact just one life, just one life. Because for me growing up, my physician, my pediatrician was a white male. And he always said, you know, a female, you know, when you go in or how school, you know, what do you want to do? And I'm saying, well, I want to be a doctor. He said, you shouldn't do that. You know, you're a female. Don't you want to get married, have a family? Maybe you should think about something else.
Wait a minute.
It is what I want to do.
Wait a minute. I should have let off with that. What? And yeah. Wait, how old were you?
I had to be middle school, maybe.
Middle school? I mean, we're about the same age.
He was
this is like
pediatrician until.
I mean, we're doing the same.
Until what? I like left to go away to school.
Mm-hmm. No way.
So he always said that, but I knew it was, you know, what I wanted to do. So I said, you know, no biggie, you know, whatever. So I went on, you know, went to medical school, went to residency, all of that, became a doctor, came back home. And I said, you know, let me look him up because I got to tell him like I did it. I looked him his name up, obituary, he passed away. Mm. If I could go back and tell him I did it. Mm. But, you know, he's always stuck with me. And I feel like, you know, being a pediatrician, there's something that sticks with you. You always remember your childhood pediatrician, you know. Mm. People say I went to them since my baby was a newborn, you know? So I always feel like if I have the opportunity to tell a child something different than what I was told, I've done my job. Mm. So when they come in and they say, you know, I want to be a doctor, I say, you can do it. Because I'm never going to look at somebody and tell them what was told to me, that you can't do it, you shouldn't do it, you should think about something else. So when I walk in the room, I can already tell, like, I had a patient the other day, she was maybe like 18, 19, and I walked in and she goes, and she stood there. I said, I'm Dr. Steven. How are you? She just stood there. And she said, I've never seen anyone that looks like me. Mm. And before she left, she said, can I please get a picture with you? I've just never, you know. And people are so grateful and thankful. And they say, thank you for being here. Thank you for being seen. It's just so nice to, you know, see somebody that looks like you. And I know that it makes a difference. So, you know, I try to be culturally competent to all my patients. I try to educate them. And I make sure that when I see, you know, someone coming up, who wants to do anything, you know, you want to be a chef, you can do it. If nobody's ever told you you're doing a great job, you can do it. And as long as, you know, I at least inspire one person, I'm like, I was uninspired, I did my job. Wow.
Yo, that, I mean, that is powerful. Yo, that hits home, especially because for me, I'm still thinking about the fact that, like I said, we're very, I mean, close in age. So this had to be like,
yeah,
we're talking about
middle
school. It's not that far removed. This is like 2000s, right? Like, so
2000s, exactly.
So for that mentality to still be, but then again, I'm like Florida, right? So then part of me is like, okay, it's Florida too, right? So I don't know, but
just Florida.
Yeah. But I mean, okay. So yes, we got to end it like that because I don't even want, that was strong. That was noteworthy, and I hope that others who are listening can be able to really draw a lot from that. But man, says Dr. Shayna Steven in the streets, traveling, known as Mrs. O'Connor. But, you know, here, Dr. Steven, thank you so much for jumping on the show. How can people, I know you're doing your traveling, you know, you want people to follow you on IG. How do people reach out to you? They want to continue to get these low prices for seats, exit row.
Get all the tips. Tell, get some little comments from the office.
Yeah, tell people how they can follow
you. I'm on IG, I'm on TikTok. The handle is the same. Hey_SHAY, SHAY, SHAY.
All right. Well, sis, thank you so much for jumping on the
show. Thank you for having me. Thank you for bridging the gap. You are appreciated.
Yeah, I'm trying my best, man. But it's people like you all who really make it fun and make it worth it. So, man, wishing you whatever we can do to continue to support, man. You know, please reach out, let us know. But, man, we wish you nothing but the best. Keep us in mind when you're traveling, you know, and best of luck with everything you do. Shout out to the islands, though.
Thanks for having me.
So that's going to do it for this episode of My Black is Transnational. If you like what you heard, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and review the podcast. You can learn more about this podcast by visiting our website at blacktransnational.com. You can follow me, the host, at blacktransnational_ on Instagram, or you can follow the podcast at Black Transnational Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. So, until next time, my name is Dr. Kalaishi Bay Lamberts. My Black is Transnational, and I hope by the end of this, yours will be too. Peace.